This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 1912 Exiles podcast. I am your occasional host, Jack from WeAreExiles.net. And wow, we are almost a full panel. Reese has had a late drive back from Newport after today's game. But yeah, we've got myself, we've got Jamie Harris, award-winning journalist. Hello.
Good evening.
We've got Dr. Ed Bridges. Hello.
Not so far.
Hello, Amberman in the North, Ian Beat on the street. How are you?
I'm really good.
Brilliant. Okay. Now, without further ado, we just have to get this out of the way. Ko-Fi contributors, so touched by your contributions as of lately. So without boring the rest of you, let's get through the names and our gracious thanks to you all. Dr. Bad Vibe, Girl Saturday, Neil, Phil, Tony, Josh, Ben, Stu, and an extremely generous donation from Surrey Exiles, which completely blew us away and honestly will sustain the pod for a good while yet. If you can hear the quality of my microphone, well, there you go. There's where the dollars are going. If you set up a monthly Ko-Fi donation and haven't had your free gift yet from us, it's because we've not got your address. You'll have a message from us in Ko-Fi asking for it, so reply to that and we'll dispatch your present. Otherwise, just drop us a line on Twitter or x.com. And also, thanks to the regular subscribers, your Hamids, your Daniels, your Billy Punks, your Marks, and your Simons. But before we go to the panel to discuss a lot of issues, Jamie travelled to Colchester on what turned out to be a not very good Friday, and he made us a short match diary about the day. So let's pitch it to the clip and hear all about it.
Morning, afternoon all. Welcome to, not the North, I'm not Ian. Welcome to the South. Welcome to Essex. Jamie here, en route to Colchester away. It's been quite a journey so far, thanks to the rail replacement bus service, cutting what should have been a 45-minute train ride from Liverpool Street into a three-part epic adventure. Just been stuck in traffic on the A12 for a bit, but now I've made it to a place called Witham, just outside Colchester. Stopped in a lovely little pub here. It's been quite a week with Wales. Obviously, the Wales defeat on Tuesday, the weather, the trains. I had second thoughts whether I'd bother with this game or not. But you derive weird joy and pleasure from these kind of away trips, and they make or break you, don't they? So I'm here anyway. Yeah, it's a funny one today. It's the first time in about 10 games we've not been up against a promotion team or a playoff rival, but Colchester are in that relegation fight. They're really scrapping. They'll be fighting for every point, so it's not going to be an easy game. But our form has been all right over the last 15 games since the turn of the year. We've been, I think, one of the form teams in the league, won more than we've lost. I thought we were fantastic at Wimbledon. I thought the back three coped very well. The fullbacks did a decent job. Would have liked to see them get forward a bit more, but Sanzala's been doing all right. Evans, you know, he's due a goal, isn't he? So, you know, does a lot of harrying, a lot of running around, does a lot for the team. But, you know, I think he's due a goal. And you know what? I've said it on Twitter, I've said it on the pod. I'm so impressed with how Brent Morris has been playing as well. He's been fantastic. He's been our ever-present in midfield. And he's, you know, got plenty of goals this season, plenty of crackers as well. Anyway, I'll finish my pint, McGuinness, and then make our way to Colchester. All right, we are in the last 15 minutes of our journey, our voyage to Colchester. We've just left from Witham. It's lovely. Hit up a couple of lovely little country pubs. So wet the whistle ahead of today. And you know what? Yeah, I was a bit miserable in my earlier record about the week, the horrible weather, the train journey, the weather, the Wales game. But I'm with my good friend Charlie, the Southampton fan, occasional contributor to 1912 Exiles. And he did remind me that, you know, this is probably the best weekend of the year. If you can get a few pints in on a Friday, a four-day weekend, sun threatened to come out, although there's some grey skies now. But yeah, he reminded me, this is isn't it the best weekend of the year, Charlie?
It is. good weather would help. There's also a lot of football.
So Charlie, what are your thoughts on Southampton's season? It's quite exciting for you, isn't it?
It is exciting. I think now it's kind of win-win. Worst case, we're going to make the playoffs, which, as we were discussing earlier, we haven't, well, not in my lifetime anyway, we haven't made any playoffs. So we're aiming for second place, but worst case, fourth. And it might be an exciting trip to Wembley.
Yeah, the P word, playoffs. Obviously, we've mentioned it occasionally on this podcast in the last month or so. You know, it slipped out of the lexicon after Barrow away last week. But, you know, a win here, you never know. Charlie doesn't know he says it's exciting, a playoff, but he's not been through it like we have in the last couple of years. So I'm just going to tell you now, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. Two-legged semi-finals, could go either way, on a knife edge, and then a Wembley all-or-nothing match. It sounds fun, but it's not fun, I'm telling you.
You've just got to make the final, haven't you, really?
Yeah. That's it. Well, you know, we've done three... tempting fate here, and I don't think we'll get the playoffs, but if we did, we've done three playoffs in the last probably, 10, 15 years. Always made the final, always got through that semi-final, but we lost the last two finals. So anyway, we're going to get ourselves into Colchester, schlep up through the town centre, up to the ground is miles away, isn't it? It's on the fringes of town with the A12, so we're going to schlep up there, get to the ground, and see what's what. Oh, we just got to Colchester's ground here after a long old walk, and bumped into David here and also to Joe. Joe, you're a Wolves fan. What on earth are you doing here?
I'm a Wolves fan, and so obviously I picked a team that play in the same colours because Wolves are there. I'm mates with David to my right, and I'm also trying to finish the 92 Football League grounds. And I've adopted Newport to finish off the last few. So I was at Barrow last week for number 90, and Colchester today is number 91 out of 92.
Amazing. I can't believe you went to Barrow last week. What? Honestly, fair play to you. All right, when did you first realise you wanted to do this? Like, what was the first ground where you were like, yeah, we need to get this done?
So it's always been a lifetime ambition because I've seen him play in three leagues. Yeah, I've actually done 70 of the 92 just by following Wolves.
Really?
And I always said, if I ever got into the 80s, I'd just finish it. And I started the season on 85. So I thought, right, this is the season.
Yeah. Okay. And right, you said this is number 91. What's missing?
The last day of the season, Exeter City. I'm really delighted. St James's Park's a brilliant ground. I think the big bank at St James's Park is the biggest terrace left in England, I think.
Really?
I think so.
Is that where you're going to be?
I'm actually going to be in the away end because I'm going to be with some Oxford United fans because that's where I live.
Okay, and your highlights. I've got to ask your highlights because, firstly, what do you make of this ground here?
I had very low expectations and they were even lower when I walked in. Yeah. I feel sorry. I never went to Layer Road, But honestly, playing football in a car park's better than this. Yeah, it's a bit of a sad one. Just, generic new build.
Last question. What makes like the perfect grand view? You've done 91 grands. What's the ones that you're on that'll live long in memory?
Uniqueness, basically. What does this ground offer that no other ground offers? So like Exeter have got a big bank. You've got grounds that are in a city centre, a ground that you can walk in. I mean, Rodney Parade's a brilliant example because you've got the uncovered terraces, you've got that fantastic stand along the side of the pitch. But this is the problem with new build grounds. As good as Brentford's new ground is, it's just an architectural project.
Of course.
Whereas you go to your Carlisle's and your Accrington's and there's a character seeping out of every brick.
Amazing. Yeah, well, we got a lot of bricks here, haven't we? So not so much character, but yeah. All right, well, I'll ask both of you, lads. Obviously, kickoff is, well, we're nearing kickoff now. What are we thinking about today? Obviously, you saw Barrow last week. You saw us play at Wimbledon 2 weeks ago. What are your hopes today? I'll come to you, David.
Hopefully we'll get the win. I think if we don't get the win, then realistically, it's any outside chance of the playoffs are probably off. We've been inconsistent, but when we play well, we look like we can beat anyone. So hopefully, I think we just have to go at it and, yeah, hopefully 2-0 to Newport, I'd say.
What do you think? I mean, you saw us last week. What are you thinking today?
Yeah, I saw Barrow. I also went to Wrexham earlier in the season. So my record watching Newport away is rubbish.
Get out.
So, yeah. But I'm here to watch a Newport win. 2-0 Newport.
Yeah, I'm confident. All right, here we go. All right, so we're in the ground, and I'm just sat with Charlie, and Charlie is about to taste his first Bovril. Charlie, thoughts, feelings ahead of your first taste?
I've heard rumours that it's kind of like the roast dinner of the flat white world, or I guess the other way around, the flat white of the roast dinner world. So, I'm excited.
It's live tasting. Here we go.
Oh, that is nice. It's very nice. That is a hug in a paper cup. That is
hug in a mug. We've not yet done the Dr. Ed Bridges pepper and oregano. We'll try and do some of that. In a little bit. But here we go. Right, there's a football match happening as well. I should mention. We're away at one end. I think it's the north end. It's all right, this ground. Four like proper stands. There's gaps in each corner, so it's a little bit blustery. But it's not too bad. The sun's come out. We're sat in the sun. It's lovely. We're going to grab a kebab pie at half time. And pitch looks all right. I was a little bit worried about the pitch coming up here today. I was worried it might get called off. They had a few postponements. I can see some sandy bits. There's one bit in the middle of the pitch, and then down the touchlines looks pretty awful. But you know what? They've done a good job here, and looks like it's playing all right. So, what, half hour in now? Goalless. We haven't really had a lot of the ball, to be honest. Probably a one half chance. Zanzala had a chance there, but you know, Colchester have been pegging us back a bit. They've hit the bar, they sort of waltzed through us, hit the bar. And just now, Townsend made a fantastic save. Colchester on the break, crossed it in. He just got himself in the way of it. He's down injured. And so we're about three or four other Newport players, just little niggles and little, being caught. So we just have a bit of stopping play while Townsend gets some treatment. But yeah, goalless so far. Well, Amir, do floodlight watch. Not great. I mean, they've got kind of like four sort of little stands in the corner. And they've just got two rows of floodlights. It's pretty sparse looking floodlights, to be honest with you. Ground itself, quite blustery. You can really feel, I mean, we were in the sun, but the sun's gone in now. Well, you know what? Out of the blue, Newport County are 1-0 up. Long ball down the right hand side. Knocked inside by Will Evans, I think. And absolutely a hell of a mix up. Keeper went the wrong way. Zanzala just lobbed it into the net, 1-0, about 5 minutes before half time. Sorry for the lack of reporting during that game. Not really much to report on, to be honest. That 2-1 defeat, we were pretty dreadful. And despite the goal coming against the run we're playing the first half, and we looked all right. Second half, Colchester the better side, very physical side. They sort of brought the ball forward quite well, and we really struggled to deal with it. We didn't have any of the ball, any of the play. We looked a little bit shattered, maybe a little bit jaded from the, you know, the recent months, exploits against a lot of strong teams. A lot of travelling as well. Just a third away on the bounce. You know, I'm not making excuses. We were poor today. You know, we were second best to most. Most of what Colchester could throw at us, and the goal in the 90th minute, the winner. Well, I mean, it was a great goal for them, but yeah, I'm not even that disappointed. I'm just that I could see it coming. It felt like the playoff push that was threatening to happen is very much over now, I'd say. You know, we still got a big game against Colchester. Against Crawley on Easter Monday, and we could, you know, maybe claw our way back. But I feel like it's going to be too much to do now. The final stretch of games. Not many positives for that performance. I thought Nick Townsend, as usual, was the star of the show. Kept us in the game in the first half, made some cracking saves again in the second half, clattered a few times as well. One of those games. Away fans in great form, but resigned to the fact that really we didn't deserve anything for that game. And Colchester fighting for their lives, they did a good job. So 2-1, gonna drown our sorrows in a cracking little pub called the Dog and Pheasant, just down the road from the ground. And onwards and upwards.
So Jamie, what did that result feel like? Was it inevitable? Did it have that feeling to it?
You can tell by the clip. Yeah, I didn't actually record much, if anything, from the actual game itself. We went one up in the first half through an odd defensive mix-up. But aside from that, I can't really name you a single chance we had. We were quite sort of lackluster going forward. And, you know, the result did have that air of inevitability. So as soon as we conceded the equaliser, you just felt that winner was coming. There was, and I'm sure, we'll have similar sentiments, if we're discussing the Crawley game from today, and of course Barrow as well. People are dead on their feet. It feels like we've run out of steam, running on fumes. I think Cocker actually used that phrase today. The game was, pretty turgid stuff, to be honest. But Colchester, they were big units, and they just outplayed us completely. I'm loath to blame tiredness every single defeat or poor performance we have. We know we're going to play 46 league games a season. I don't think we've had that much of fixture congestion, to be honest with you, despite the cup run. It's not been too bad. We didn't have loads of postponements like we have in previous years. Maybe injuries played a part, and a lot of players are playing a lot of minutes, a lot more than they would. But I don't know. I think even with a side where we're fully fit, I'm not sure that we rotate and change things around that much. I think Coughlin has his preferred setup. Look, I'm just loath to blame tiredness. I think there's a bit more to it than that, and I think we're just struggling to come up with ideas to break down sides at the moment.
I think that both Colchester and Barrow, Barrow was a very poor game, and I haven't seen today, which I'm assuming was also a very poor game. I just think basically we have run out of players. I think if you look at the fact that Maka, Delaney, Clark and Lewis out leaves us massively short at the back. But the implications of that are it's got implications all over the park, hasn't it? Because Benno's got to drop back. So we don't have that shielder in front of the back four that Benno does. That means that Digger and Morris have got to play deeper. So that makes it harder to create chances. The wing backs who've come in to replace Lewis and Maka are nowhere near as good. So we're not getting forward enough and getting the crosses in. So we're stretched. There's gaps. I just think we've run out of players, and that comes down to squad depth, doesn't it? And it comes down to the experience you've got in the squad and on the bench. I think that's just caught up with us at the end of a long season. And but the good thing is the players we have got have put the points on the board. We're not struggling, so it's job done for me. Even if the season ends up as a bit of a damp squib towards the end, they've done what they need to do, which is getting up points on the board.
Yeah, and lest I forget to remind everyone every pod that I appear on,
lowest budget in the league, guys. Lowest budget. You know, that's, you know, let's chill out a sec. We've got a new owner and a lowest budget. We're doing what we can, and I think we're doing a lot. Jamie, hands up. What have you got?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Ian's point. I think it's and the fact that it's the lowest budget in the league, we are very loath to play or give starts to the likes of James Waite, even with this sort of threadbare side here. You know, that midfield three of Brim Morris, thank goodness he's been ever present. And you know, Charles Lee being back fit, and then Wildig as well. Yeah, that's not changing anytime soon as long as they're fit. It does say a lot, you know, as soon as you take out players elsewhere or you lose players elsewhere, we just don't have that depth. And it just seems like we're not really, you know, confident in playing some of the younger guys, you know, to give them a bit of time on the pitch. Maybe we will now because, you know, we're not playing for anything anymore.
Frawley, right. Breaking a six-year record. Worst home defeat in 6 years. Ed, you said you're uncharacteristically angry after that one. What's the matter? What's wrong?
Yeah, well, I think I went through all seven stages of grief after that one, but anger does seem to be the one to which I keep returning. I don't get angry too much after football matches because life's too short, but you do get once or twice a season a game where you just walk away and you do feel cross because the level of performance was just miles off what we've come to expect from a Graham Coughlin team. I mean, look, we went behind after 36 seconds or whatever it was, and it's always hard to come back from there. But even before the game, I was looking at it, and we'd started the three up front, Zanzala, Evans and Seb. And I was saying to Stu and to Ollie, whenever we start with three up front, it will go one way or the other wildly. You know, sometimes it'll be a tactical masterstroke and we will undo a side unexpectedly. You know, that's what happened against Stockport earlier in the season. But then there are other games, and today I'm afraid was one of them, where we just play into the hands of the opposition. And that isn't to say we shouldn't try tactical innovation and do something different and surprising the opposition and taking the game to us occasionally. I'm all for that. But it was pretty obvious early on that Colchester were quite enjoying playing against us. You know, after we let in the goal, we pushed and harried and tried to come back into it. But we weren't taking our chances, even with three up front. And the opposition, and I think this is what happened in some of the other games, certainly against Barrow, I think, if what I heard from Ian is right, they were just playing through and around our high press. And if the opposition have enough quality to do that, and they're not getting intimidated by having Evans and Seb right on top of them from the back, if they've got time and quality to pass around us, then we are in big trouble. And that was what happened today. So some of the fault, I think, is tactical. But make no mistake, I don't think it can be laid at Graham Coughlin's door today. Graham Coughlin was let down by his players more than anything else. I know that it was a bit of a makeshift defence, but the defence was shambolic. I mean, if you watch the first three goals, certainly, you know, the mistakes that we're making. I think the second one, the number of players who had a chance to put in a challenge and didn't. You know, you've got to be better than that. And I think, all right, you've got some young players in there, but they're still professionals, and some of them should be playing for a contract. And I think the likes of Bonsweather, Baker and Bright, it's very hard to say they made much of a case for why we should be looking to give them a contract for next season on the back of that. They really did not cover themselves with glory at all. I fear I might have been a bit harsh on Bonswell with some of the stuff I was saying on Twitter, but you know, he looked so out of his depth. And up front wasn't a better story. You know, Crawley had a small number of chances but took them. We created quite a lot of chances, but we were either shooting high and wide, or more often than not, we were shooting straight at the keeper. You know, Jeffcott had a great chance, I think, at 2-0, and he just heads it straight at the goalie. And, you know, we've got to be finding the corner of the net and at least forcing the goalie to make a decent save. And there was nothing really about today that you could take away as a positive. It was just one of those. And, you know, we don't get too carried away on this pod when things go well, and we don't get too carried away when things were bad, but today was bad. It really was. And I just hope that we can find some momentum between now and the end of the season.
I can't tell you were having a bad time with it, because every time I checked the group chat, there were no words. There was just the emoji with the beach and the umbrella. Care to elaborate on what that emoji really... what's the feeling behind it?
Some of that was tongue-in-cheek. So there has been all this talk about other players on the beach. I'm not entirely sure that's fair, and I don't think Coughlin is the sort of manager who would tolerate that. But having said that, I think it's more tiredness than being on the beach. But I think there are one or two who I came away today thinking, do you really want this? Do you really want to show that you can be a fourth division footballer, or are you now just kind of coasting? And that's unfair, I suspect, on my part. But I don't think I'm the only one who will have come away thinking that.
I think worse questions arise when you lose 4-0 at home for the first time in 6 years. I don't know what we did 6 years ago.
Graham Westley's last game.
Oh, 4-0. It's Orient, yeah.
Memories. Have you got your keys and the tactics, Truckee? And anything to opine? I know you didn't see the game. Is there anything that Jamie and Ed touched on that you just got to tell us? Is it any positivity from the positive man himself about what we've had to suffer through these Easter proceedings? You're full of chocolate. Come on, you've got to have something.
I'm not sure it can be positive. It's the injuries at the back that have forced the reshuffle of the midfield, which I think is creating the problems that we've got. So whether we can find a solution to that, because there were some more injuries today, wasn't there? We'll have to wait and see. But the positive for me always is that we've got the points on the board. We cannot get away from the fact that it doesn't matter what's happened this weekend. It doesn't matter what happens to a certain extent for the rest of the season. We've got the points on the board. If you look at some of the teams that are below us and around us, and you look at some of the size and the budgets that they're playing with and where we are, you know, I'll take that every time. And I'll take that.
No, we want playoffs. Playoffs or die. Well, some sect of Newport fans, I'm sure that's what they want. But come on, guys. Come on, right. Okay, that's enough misery and discussion about these two Easter games. After the break, we've got a guest feature, and we'll also zoom out to discuss the bigger questions about whether the playoff dream is truly over, what we should be expecting ahead of next season, and answering some of your questions. But first, let me get my voice on. A word from our sponsors.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back. Now, before we can carry on with our panel chat, it's time for something a little bit more lighthearted than the recent results. From one of our very favourite listeners, out of the blue, a little while back, the legend who is Phil from Northampton offered to set a quiz for the pod panel and for all of you listening. So we just couldn't say no to that. Phil sent us some clips. Let's see how this goes. The challenge is on. Over to you, Phil.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Whatever the time of day it is with you, welcome to another edition of Beat the Pod, a short, interactive quiz where you can pit your football knowledge against the 1912 Exiles' finest brains. Can you beat the pod? This round is called Seeing Double. I shall ask a question, and then, if you pause the podcast, set a timer for 2 minutes and write your answers down. When the 2 minutes is up, restart the podcast and listen to the guys at the pod as they all answer the same question. I will then give out the answers, check your score and see if you have indeed beaten the pod. So here is the question. Seeing double. In the Premier League and League Two only, how many teams can you write down that have a double letter in their name? I'll give you an example, although it's from League One, so it's not one you can include in your answers. Blackpool. That was 00. That's all you have to do. If you're ready, your time starts now.
Down goes the clock. Right. How many have we got, Ian?
I've got about eight, I think.
Eight. That's brilliant. Ed?
I've also got eight. So I've got two from the Premier League and six from League Two.
Okay. Jamie,
you won't believe how many I've got. It's eight.
I had a complete mental blank and just took myself out of it. Zero. The host doesn't play anyway. Right, Phil, give us the answers, please.
In the Premier League, there's five. There are Aston Villa, Liverpool, Nottingham Forest, Sheffield United and Tottenham Hotspur.
Of course.
And in League Two, we have Accrington Stanley, Barrow, Forest Green Rovers, Gillingham, Harrogate, Notts County, Sutton United and Walsall. And also, there's a bit of a cheeky one if you included Doncaster Rovers. Though the two R's are in two separate words, but I'll give you a point if you included that one. So there you go. Wonder how many you got, and wonder if you indeed did beat the pod. That's all for this episode, and we'll catch you again in the near future.
Oh, lovely. That was fantastic. Did anyone have Doncaster Rovers?
No. What I can't believe is that I got Notts County, but not Nottingham Forest, which makes me feel like a proper poor Ed.
Yeah. Oh. And that was an absolute joy. Phil, thank you so much for sending that. And he promises to send us more editions. So when we come together as a full panel, we'll do it again. So thank you for playing.
Great to hear from Phil. But obviously, we've heard and I've heard that Phil very sadly lost his mum over the Easter weekend. So Phil and his family, you've featured on a pod before. And we know that football is a massive part of their lives. Phil's mum was a big Cobblers fan, big Northampton fan. I know that Phil used to tweet his mum back and forward or text his mum back and forward between the county games and the Cobblers. So we're all thinking of you, the rest of the family. It's a difficult time. We do hope that you are doing as well as you can be under the circumstances. And we'll definitely, hopefully, see you at a game and, you know, hear from you again soon. So all the best, Phil, and your family from all of us at the pod. Cheers.
Yeah, look after yourself. Yeah. Thanks for that, Ian. And all the love from us to you, Phil. We hope you get through it, and we're here for you anytime you need us. Anyway, let's pitch to some meatier questions now about the playoff dream. We've been itching to talk about it. We've got big opinions, right? Let's just dive straight in. Ian, is the playoff dream over?
Yes, and for me, it was never on. We're not a playoff side. We've had some great results this season. We've got points on the board. We've had some great trips, fantastic games, Harrogate, Wimbledon, and plenty of others. But I never looked at us and thought, well, we're a playoff team. We might have snuck in if results have gone our way. And we're in a division where, apart from the top two or three, everybody can beat everybody, which is one of the interesting things, I think, about Division Four. If you look at Notts County, they've absolutely battered us twice, but they're below us in the table. But for me, we're not a playoff side. We were never going to get in it, and we're not going to get in it.
It's not happening, Jamie Harris?
It's not happening. And you know what? I feel we would have been battered in the playoffs. Yeah. I was saying to my mate in the diary, actually, I don't know if it made it in the diary or not, but every time we make the playoffs, well, certainly the last three times, we've always made it to the final. This year, I wouldn't be, if we snuck in, I would not be confident at all of beating whoever we came up against in the semi-final. You look at those sides there, you look at Barrow, you look at Mansfield, Stockport, Wrexham, MK Dons. Would not be comfortable about winning a two-legged match over either of them. I just don't think we're good enough. And that's okay. We don't have to be good enough every year. I think we're probably as good as we are where we are right now in the table, which is mid-table, maybe just under the top half. That's all right. It's just disappointing how it's petered out.
Yeah, I agree with that. The fact that we've been in the mix until the 1st of April is pretty impressive. I would, of course, have liked us to have kept that momentum that we've had during kind of February and March and seen if we could take it on through. But I think, as Jamie said, probably the slight lack of depth and slight lack of quality is just shown. And that's okay. I do want us, and I know this is repeating what I said earlier, I do really want us to just find that little bit of consistency, because it would be a real drag if we went into the summer without any momentum and, you know, with kind of questions being asked, all the rest of it. Because we all know how that went for James Robey. You know, he came in, did all right, then had a really lousy last couple of months of the season, and it just kind of sucked the energy out of the place. And, we never quite recovered that under him. I don't think that it will happen under Copland, but I think we just need to make sure a bit. We do need to get some good wins, put on some good performances and just finish the season with our heads held high, and then we can go into the summer and feel that we can sort things out and hopefully have a really, really good 2024-25.
And I think hindsight is a nice thing to have. I think that Graham, as Mr. Cocker himself, has demonstrated what he can do with a budget, which he hasn't yet had. And, you know, there are murmurs about talking about, is he going to be Hugh Jenkins' manager, you know, because it's the one he's inherited. But has Graham Coughlan really had the chance to show exactly what he can do given his limited budget? I don't think so. For me, not that the host answers all the questions, but yeah, what are the realistic expectations this season? And for me, they were just staying up, keeping us debt-free, selling the club in a calm and smart manner, which I think we did. And next season, as long as we do the same, maybe we can do a push if we like, as long as it's entertaining and we show goodwill in the transfer window, that'll be cool. But I think actually to change a manager would just sort of derail that a bit, and we're back to square one. So I like where we're going, even if we did lose 4-0 today and how painful that was. Things that we missed in recent pods, the crazy 5-3 game against Morecambe. The reemergence of Zanzala. Yeah, did you have any analysis or thoughts from that at all?
So we were not taken to task, but we had a listener who kind of gently said,
yeah, that's right,
we didn't really cover it properly, which I think was fair enough, because it was a Tuesday night game and we didn't want to do anything specific on that game because we were all going to Wimbledon on the Saturday and wanted to focus on that. But it was probably the most entertaining game of the season. And it was great that it was on a night when the club said, bring a friend for a tenner, you know, so it wasn't a huge attendance actually, because it was a Tuesday night against Morecambe, but it was better than it otherwise would have been probably for that fixture. And those who did go were richly rewarded. We were, you know, 2-0 up against the run of play. The second was a really nice volley from Scousers Lewis, which I was really pleased to see him get a goal. But it was a proper blood and thunder game end to end. When Morecambe brought it back to 3-3, it felt as though they were the team who were going to kick on. But then we kind of dug in. Then Seb got that fifth in injury time. It was really well taken and yeah, completely glorious. And it was, yeah, like I say, I think it was probably the most entertaining match of the season. It felt a little bit, almost the opposite really of today. You know, today's loss felt like there needed to be a kind of reckoning afterwards. I think after that game against Morecambe, there was a sense that it was just one of those crazy, mad Tuesday nights where just stuff happens and there's goals flying in and you just got to hope that you come away with at least a point. But as an experience to just kind of live in the moment for, it was really, really good. I think anyone who was there came away feeling really invigorated. It was a great advert for fourth division football. It was a great advert for the sort of high-octane stuff that Coughlan wants to produce. And I suspect when we come back over the summer and talk about our favourite games of the season, that will probably be my pick, because it was just a bit bonkers, really. It deserves for us to dwell on it a little bit, even if it's been sort of slightly overtaken by all the stuff that's happened since then.
Okay, then. We've discussed the meatier side of things. Let's lighten it up and open it up to the listeners. Now, we've been rolling for quite a while, so we're going to have to go through these quite quick fire. So let's just dive in. Let's go for it. Ball on Twitter. Answers on a postcard, please. First past the post. Anything you want to say, put your hands up. Has Bryn Morris exceeded your preseason expectations? Jamie Harris.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought he played fantastically well when I saw him play at Wimbledon. I don't think anyone really covered themselves in glory at the Colchester game I was at, and from the sounds of it, same today. But the fact that he is, you know, one of our ever-present players, you know, speaks volumes. A, he can stay fit, and B, he scores bangers, but he gets plenty of them as well. So, yeah, to have a midfielder getting in amongst the goals is priceless for a side like ours with a budget like ours. So, yes, certainly exceeded my expectations, and yeah, one of the standout players of the season for me.
Paul also asks, what do you make of the low profile that Hugh Jenkins is currently keeping at Ridges?
I'm quite happy with it. I don't want a high profile chairman. That generally doesn't end well. You know, we've had high profile chairman in the past. And if Hugh Jenkins is quietly getting on with things in the background, trying to make us profitable and functional as a business, that's fine. That's not a problem. Or if it is a problem, it's a one of those good problems. So yeah, long may it continue.
Okay, long time subscriber Hamid Baladabadi. Is it too early to discuss contract renewals now? That's a touchy
we've done it
after the date. I mean, we've discussed a little bit. Is there anyone you could pick up Ian now? You definitely give a contract to next season?
All of us on the pod.
Well, Reese isn't here.
Get renewed, isn't it? Yeah, Reese is dubious, but the rest of us, we're shoo-ins.
And that ties into Mark Vickery, who sent this in. Should we be trying you for the remainder of the season? Now, you know, we're happy with the points tally, Ian. Should we be seeing more of Rye to see how he can put himself in maybe the 24-25 squad? Mark says Bright and Sanka also deserve a chance with defensive injuries and a 3-5-2 tactics. The tactics truck's coming back out.
This might be controversial. I think it's really clear that Cockrell doesn't think that they're probably good enough, young players we've got. I'm happy to give young players a chance if we think they're good enough, but I don't think they are. And I think Cockrell doesn't think they are. So I think that the way we are going to be better in this division is that we need a really solid squad of, you know, 27-year-olds. You bring Morris's, you know, with a few older players and the odd youngster, right? I'm old enough in the tooth to remember us getting relegated out of Division 4 with a team full of 17 and 18-year-olds. It was not a good sight. As you famously said, you don't win Division 4 with kids, right? So if they're not good enough, we don't play them, and I don't think they are. So for me, you know, yeah, move on. I'd be surprised if any of those are here next season.
Ian, any Stanzala snippets?
I think it has been brilliant to watch him come back into the starting lineup. I saw him come back on at Harrogate and he scored two. He was completely instrumental in both goals at Wimbledon. So he set the first one up for Bryn Morris, and the second one was from a free kick that he won out on the side that Adam Lewis swung in. He scored at Colchester. And it makes me a little bit sort of fondly and a bit sad, really, because I think myself and Jamie going back a season saw Bogle and Zanzala play one game, I think, together at Sutton. And you were thinking, that for me looked like a partnership that would cause a lot of problems in Division 4. And unfortunately, we've never really been able to see them, either one or the other one of them. One of them has been injured, haven't they? But it's been great to see him back. You know, the question would be, would you offer him a contract for next season based on that? Could you get him on a pay-per-play deal? I'd have that. I'm not sure I'd offer him a contract, but on a pay-per-play, I'd have him. But it's been great to see him back, and I think he has got something to offer. The problem is his injury record.
It is. I mean, I will just say, earlier on when I was talking about all the players today who didn't help their cause in terms of new contracts, he's probably the one exception to that. He really has been a proper live wire. I think, yeah, he's shown in the last few games he can get goals. His link-up play has been really, really good. His energy's been great. Yeah, he comes with an injury risk, which probably does count against him. But I wouldn't be surprised, actually, if maybe we did try and retain him for next season, which I didn't expect to happen at all. I thought we might see him get a few games before the end of the season, but I didn't think he would be one we might be looking at for next year. But I wonder whether he might have just changed Coughlin's mind.
Absolutely. I think he's the form striker right now, isn't he? I mean, not many of our strikers are in form. You know, Will Evans is a bit of a goal drought now, isn't it? And obviously Bogle's been out injured and shown really that we did miss him in the last few months. You know, you wonder what kind of performances we could have put in, particularly in those tough away games, if Bogle had been in the team. But Sanzala, yeah, his energy, his work rate, his hold-up play, which, you know, I hadn't seen much of him, so I didn't know much about, you know, what his real assets were, but his holder play is fantastic, and the fact that he loves to run at defenders as well, it's just exciting to watch. So yeah, I mean, I would 100% offer him a new contract.
Moving on, Andrew Morrison. The summer will be the first real opportunity for Hugh Jenkins to reshape the infrastructure of the club. What realistic expectations are there from the pod regarding to training facilities, lease renewal, commercial uplift leading to what we hope is an improved budget next season? What do we reckon?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, we had the question just now about Hugh Jenkins and his sort of quiet behind the scenes. You know, you're not really seeing much of him, which I think is good.
And you know, you hope that he's using these few months to set all of that infrastructure stuff in place, the commercial side of things, and you know, obviously all the training stuff, the lease renewal, that is all going to take a little while, and that is all going to be, you know, we're not going to see anything until there's an announcement and it happens. I think the interesting thing is around reshaping the squad. You know, every single season we're going to have to do a fairly big, you know, reshuffle. You know, a lot of players going out, Coughlin, mate, or you know, whoever, you know, might not think that they're good enough, and then all the loan players go back, and then we've got to find replacements for those as well. I'm just curious about what kind of budget that we think we're going to have. I don't think, you know, Hugh Jenkins has made no illusions that he's just going to pump money into this team. You know, we may rely on a few player sales to sort of, you know, get that ball rolling. So while we hopefully we'll have a bigger budget than what we did last summer, you know, I'm not like thinking, oh, we're going to be able to put six figure bids in for players or anything like that.
Yeah, I think to build on that, it's not so much that we're going to be going out buying loads of players with fees, but what it probably does mean is that we are able to hold on to players and sell them when we want to at the price that we think is right for them. I think that's the difference. That, you know, so Evans is a good example. We didn't sell Evans in the January transfer window. Whether there were bids or not, we don't know. I think Copland said there weren't. But in the past, we might have been your hand off at the first offer that came across the table. Whereas I think this time we were in a position where we'd say, no, we're going to hold on to him until the end of the season. If he goes in the summer, it'll be for what we consider to be the right amount. And in the meantime, we're going to buy Luke Jeffcott, who we see as the long-term replacement, so that we've got a pipeline of players to replace him if he does go. That seems to me the thing that we will get from Jenkins is there'll be a plan and a strategy and money to kind of make that happen. It's not that we're going out and doing a Wrexham and spunking loads of money on players who shouldn't be playing at this level, but it is saying, right, we will sell players for what they're worth at a time that suits us, and we will already have their replacement in the building when we do it. That sounds like a modest step forward, but actually in terms of planning, I think that's really critical. And I also think we couldn't ask for a better manager to do that than Graham Coughlin.
Don't expect too much too soon. I think it is going to be evolution, not revolution. I think there's going to be a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes that it will be obvious to us as fans. This might sound a bit harsh, but I think that we've probably been operating almost still as a conference club or as a non-league club for quite a long time. And I think that, you know, I think there's a realization, I think, that Jenkins will be coming in and saying, well, if he puts in the place the infrastructure for us to operate properly as a league Division 4 club or league club, whatever you want to call us, I think that's what he's going to be aiming to do. And I think there's a lot of work to be done there to get us to that point. You know, increasing the commercial side of things, you know, lease training, all of this sort of stuff, as well as having, I think, a clear transfer strategy, the sort of thing that Ed's talked about. But I also think that he will be looking to put in place how he thinks he wants us to play, who the players are that he wants to try and bring in around that. What's he going to do around youth setup and all this sort of stuff, I think is really important. But I think it will happen, and I think he will put a plan together and a strategy of how he's going to achieve that. But I think it will be evolution and not revolution. You won't necessarily see it instantly, and it will be the sort of some of the quiet things like the Jeffcott coming in before Evans moves on type thing that we will start to see. And I think we might get more used to that, but I think that, you know, I agree with Ed. You know, I don't want personality politics. I like the fact that he's keeping his head down, getting on with things. I'm not interested in someone coming in and saying, I'm the big I am. But it might not be as exciting as some people might think it's going to be.
Patience, County fans, patience. For me, the big tell, the first big thing that he did was the Jeffcott signing on paper. Perfect replacement. Couldn't do any better given the scenario that we had with Will doing fantastically well and showing himself off in front of hundreds of thousands on television, and then Jeffcott on paper was perfect. And if we carry that on, who's to say what can happen next season? But I'm keeping my expectations just in the middle there. On Jeffcott though, Stu sends in, I mean, it was he came on today for a bit. Why isn't Jeffcott getting more minutes, do we think, Ed?
So when we signed him, I said, look, we need to give him time. He's hardly played any football for ages. He needs to get himself fit. He needs to get himself match sharp. you know, let's just see, give him time and not expect too much. But I found myself today when he came on thinking, you've had like 2 months, 2.5 months now. Like, I think at some point he needs to get a goal just to kind of show us all what he can do. Like I say, he got himself into some good positions today. He had one almost free header, managed to get above the defender, get a good header, but straight at the goalkeeper. And I wonder whether he's got a little bit of what Will had last season of just trying too hard to score, like too desperate to prove himself. I'm sure once he gets one, he'll get two. And once he gets two, you know, it'll all start flowing and he'll be all right. Because he is quality at this level. And everything that Plymouth fans and Swindon fans told us about him suggests he will be really good. But yeah, he does need a goal.
If ever there was a time, it's during a Will Evans dry spell. But that's the double-edged sword, isn't it? Because do you play your scoring a striker, or do you give Jeffcott a chance? I know that's not a word, Ed, but I'm making up on the spot. Jamie Harris.
I think you need to give Will Evans a bit of a rest, to be honest. It seems Coughlin's very reluctant to sub him off. And obviously, I think he end up playing at wing-back today because of the injury. So maybe his sort of versatility does help him out a bit and keep him on the pitch. And he's a very fit player as well. He doesn't stop running.
I would be a big fan of giving Evans a game or two at left wing back. You know, he's played there before. He can do a job. He will be a lot more reliable in that position than Matty Bonswell. It takes the pressure off him to score a little bit, but he can still contribute to the team. And it kind of shores up an area where we are weak at the moment. So I would be very much in favour of giving that idea a second hearing.
Let's go to the Rose Ed WhatsApp secret group, and they sent some questions in. They've sent a few in, so let's go with this one. Will Coco be offered a new contract with 12 months to go with his existing one? Any thoughts, anybody?
That is a really tough question, because on the face of the, you know, what he's done this season, you say he's exceeded expectations, he's done a good job, he's taken us to mid-table. You know, you've got to be a bit realistic at this level, but we, because of the low profile that Hugh Jenkins has sort of taken, and you know, he's not given too much away in terms of what he wants to see from this side or how quickly he wants to see the side develop, whether he even believes that Graham Coughlin's the right man for it, I don't think we can guarantee anything right now. I think all of us would probably say, yeah, give him another contract, or you know, he deserves a chance. Yeah, we might have some concerns over you know, him getting us to that next level, but ultimately there's one man who's making that decision and we don't know what he's going to do.
If we were top of the table in October and other clubs were sniffing around Coughlin, then he might rush to do it, but I think at the moment it's not at the top of his kind of priority list.
I think that we're all thinking about what Jenkins is going to do. I think we also, what we're not thinking about is, what does Coco want to do? You know, Coco lives in Sheffield, doesn't he? His family's in Sheffield. It's a big ask, I think, to be coming and managing us. There'll be an awful lot of managerial changes at our level, won't there? I suspect come the end of the season, there's a lot of clubs in the north, as we know, who might be looking for other managers. You know, so I don't think it's just about what Jenkins wants to do. I think there's another side to this, and that's what does Cocker want to do, and a lot of that will be down to, you know, both of them just seeing if they fit and work together and what the strategy is and what the planning and what the thinking is. And we're not party to that, nor should we be. But I think we need to think about that side of it as well. It's not just about what Jenkins wants.
But I truly believe we were on the precipice of a bit of a crisis with board members dropping like flies and trying to sell the club, and were completely out of steam in terms of running a club. There were noises around Graham Coughlin doing just more than being a football manager. We have a lot to thank for him. Would anyone else in a struggling League Two environment think, hang on a second, this is someone that can really, really sort us out if we're struggling or in free fall? And would that be a bit of a teaser for him to go back up north? If you're listening, Graham, please don't go. I love you lots. Next one, how do we plan to build on the successful season and look to compete at the top end of next season?
I think we have to go back to what Ian and Ed was saying in this episode. You know, we need depth, we need experience. Sort of your 27-year-olds, your Bryn Morris's, we need those sort of level heads to come in, and we need probably, you know, to be able to fill a full bench of them rather than relying on a couple of youth players and the loan players. We're probably still going to be heavily reliant on that loan market, and I think it's probably going to be a bit of the luck of the draw whether we hit four or five strong loan players to sort of build on that. But yeah, we need to entice some experienced heads to come in. And yeah, I have to say, Graham Cochran's record of bringing in some of those players has been all right so far, hasn't it?
Last of the quick fire round then. Thank you for sending all of them in. It makes it much easier to record a pod with ready set questions from all of you. Please send more in the future. Let's go for it then. How does the club plan to engage and involve the fans for next season? I mean, I don't represent the club, but for me personally, just one for me, can we have more merchandise at Ronnie Parade, please? Can we, please? Because every time I go, I just want to spend more county money. Like, I want to give you money. Give me more merch, please. Ed Bridges.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And remind me of that when we come to shout outs and beefs later on. The other thing that is worth saying is there is a trust meeting being held later this month, I think the 25th, where they're going to be talking about issues around communication. I think it's really important that that there's a good turnout for that and people feed into that discussion. Annoyingly, I'm away for work, otherwise I would be there. But if someone, a listener who's going, wants to be our reporter at that one, then it'd be really good to hear what sort of things get talked about. Because, I think it's really fundamental. How does the club communicate with its fans in the post-trust ownership era?
Right, that's all the questions in the bag. Let's end the pod, then. Let's do the usuals at the end. Player of the pod. Let's rummage around in the bag like Ian Wright did on the FA Cup draw and really try and find a ball at the bottom after today. Player of the pod, who wants to go first?
I mean, I'll go. Someone's going to have to go back and tally up the player of the pods because I'm pretty sure Nick Townsend has been mentioned every single episode that we've done a player of the pod, because I'm going for Nick Townsend. He kept us in. The last two games I've seen, he kept us in with a shout, obviously winning that Wimbledon game. And then the Colchester game made a couple of absolutely corking saves, which, you know, even the Colchester fans were saying, he was probably the man of the match in terms of our side. He's probably one of the few who can really hold their head high over the last couple of weeks, I'd say. So Nick Townsend for me.
Yeah, I strongly agree with that. He was fuming after both of the first goals that his defence had left him so exposed. I think he deserves a shout out. I would slightly pip him to the post with Bryn Morris, who he's been the kind of Scott Bennett of this season. He's just always a solid, like, 8 out of 10. You know, even on a day when a lot of players were really struggling, he just gave his usual excellent performance, covered a lot of ground, got a few shots off. Yeah, I really like Bryn Morris, and he's got a big game coming up on Saturday, of course, at Grimsby, where, as we've said before, their fans were famously not very complimentary about him. I suspect he might have a point to prove. So if I was going to have a tenner on first goal scorer next Saturday, I would be having it on young Bryn Morris.
With you all the way there, Ed, I was going to give it to Bryn. He's going to be right in the running for player of the season for me, but I'll give it to him over the last, you know, not just the last couple of games, the last few games. Solid and consistent. And with all the injuries we've had, he's played a part in every game. You know, we need a few more of him, don't we? So, Uncle Bryn.
For me, play the pod, none of yous. Sort it out. We want to win. Score some goals. Come on. Shout outs. I've done my beefs. Shout outs or beefs, anyone. Anyone really want to give a shout out, really want to put out some beefs.
Well, I will pick up on the teaser that I put in earlier, because you were having a beef about the lack of merchandise at the ground. So the club have been talking about they have various things on sale. So I thought, oh, great, I'll go to the club shop today. The club shop wasn't open because of bank holiday. Even though it's a match day and there were 4,500 Newport fans in town, they didn't open. You know, I know it's run by volunteers, but that did strike me as an odd business decision to not open on the day when all of your likely customers are going to be in town with Easter money to spend. So that's my beef. But I want to give a shout out to Louis Walls, the club's media manager, who today was his last game. See, Louis was on the pod not that long ago talking to Jamie about the Man United game. He will be much missed. I know he listens. Louis, thank you for everything you've done and all the best for your next move, which sounds very exciting. You'll be a tough act to follow.
Yeah.
And Jamie, anything?
Yeah, shout out. I've got a shout out, and I've got to be shout out to the away contingent again. It was just so lovely chatting to everyone, we've even started a little WhatsApp group for London exiles, because there are more of us than you think. It was good to sort of meet a couple of them, so we're going to start a WhatsApp group to rival other WhatsApp groups. One of my beefs, though, which I did put on the Twitter account on Good Friday. I mean, Colchester's ground is so far from anything. It was such a walk up from the, because I got the training, such a walk up, and then it got me and my mate thinking, where are the grounds that are really like centrally located, city centre? You know, Rodney Brace right up there. We had a few comments as well on Twitter. It was just good chat, but it was just absolute pain. So yeah, if you've got the most city centre ground in the country, do drop us a line on 1912XLs on Twitter.
And for me, shout outs and beefs, right? Okay, we touched on this last year. We were almost going to do a charity football match, right? So I'm getting this one out early, right? Shout outs or beefs to anyone who thinks they can beat us in a charity football match. And I say this nice and early, right? Because you can get your running shoes on, get your fitness in early, so you got no excuses in the summer. So maybe if I remember that, we'll sort that out. Ian,
shout out. I'm giving a shout out to the whole squad. I know we've had a really bad weekend, but I want to just re-emphasise, we're not going down. We're happy days. So that's my shout out. That's the happiness, isn't it? Beefs. I'm going to have a little bit of a beef about Will Evans. I'm slightly annoyed. Not scoring goals, but he's getting a little bit prima donna-ish, I've noticed recently, with him constantly waving his arms in the air when berating the ball not coming up to him perfectly. And I'm like, Will, you know, you're not Ronaldo. Your first touch isn't that good anyway. So even if you played the ball to you, you'd probably miscontrol it. So just chill out, right? Just chill out and don't be waving your hands around in the air like you just don't care. You know what I mean? Let's just get on with it.
Pull your socks up and put some shin pads in, please. Brilliant. Okay. The most important thing to say is look after yourselves, look after each other, and above all, keep it your county.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.